This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Let's go to another case. Anna Kempner, the cruise ship murder. This is another horrible case that appears to be getting worse by the moment. Anna Kempner's stepbrother just pled not guilty to her murder. He is 16, not guilty to the federal charges, he's saying. He's charged with first-degree murder and aggravated SA in a federal courtroom. And right now, he's not behind bars. He's living with a relative, wearing a GPS monitor, and working at a landscaping business. His defense team is arguing he should stay right where he is. It's working out great. The prosecution has turned over their entire evidence file. The defense is making strategic moves to tell you that they are not stalling. They're preparing for a fight. The question is, what kind of fight? Eric Faddis, defense attorney, is with us, along with Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent. Eric, let's dive into this a little bit. When you look at everything this defense team has done so far, requesting the adult transfer themselves, fighting to keep him out of custody, entering the plea without him even being in the room. He wasn't in court during the plea the other day. It was a document they handed over. What are those moves telling you about how they plan to actually try this case and defend their client?
It sounds like they're being very protective of their young client here. They're trying not to expose him to a lot of publicity, to a lot of even to the courtroom process at this point, perhaps because they have something up their sleeve, they believe. My apprehension is there is going to be a specific type of mental health defense here, which I can get into whenever. Yeah. But I think they're teeing this up for restricting access to their clients so that they can mold the narrative in terms of what that defense is going to look like.
Yeah, without him even showing up at court. Let's talk about that, the mental health defense.
Yeah, I'm curious about that, too.
Because it's interesting. They say, he is on ADHD meds. And before everybody's like, oh, I'm on ADHD meds. Yeah, so am I. I get it. It doesn't mean you're going to go be a killer. But this is just part of the case, so we're going to talk about it. Some people get very touchy when I say that. But he was on them. He was also apparently not taking his sleeping medication. We don't know exactly what that was. But apparently he was taking some sort of medication for sleep, and he would not have been taking it the last several nights of the cruise. So those are some factors that could certainly play with mental health. What are your thoughts?
I think the key potentially for defense is going to be that sleeping medication and perhaps a constellation of different medications and the absence of such mm-hmm. medications. If a person, especially a young person, if their young susceptible body is on a number of medications for an extended period of time, they acclimate to those, they adapt mm-hmm. to those, and in some senses, they may sort of require those to function normally. When there's a cessation of that medication, especially for a number of days, especially in a completely different environment out on a ship in the middle of the ocean or whatever, could that have physiological consequences for that person? I'm guessing defense is going to argue that the cessation of that medication caused like a fugue state whereby the defendant was basically unconscious but still walking around doing stuff. It's kind of like sleepwalking. I've seen that fugue state defense raised before. I wouldn't be surprised if we see it here.
So how successful have you seen it raised before? Because, and we talked about this as well, when prosecution can bring up this pattern of behavior that was observed by others ahead of time and says, they can literally say, hey, this person is testifying that, hey, this is a pattern of behavior in his life that is irrespective of drugs. And it's not like you're going for not guilty by reason of insanity. It's just he's still culpable for the actions he took. And here's a pattern of behavior, irrespective of being on a boat, irrespective of not taking your meds. Who cares? It's still a pattern of behavior in his life. Is that what you think they'd counter with?
I think that would be a smart way to undercut such a defense because, the defense is like, hey, this thing that's totally out of the ordinary, totally different from his life based on a substantial change in circumstances pharmacologically in his life. That's what made him act totally out of character. This is a freak event. But then the prosecution comes, it's like, oh, freak event, huh? Let's look at the past. Let's look at the history of ongoing patterns of behavior that seem rather consistent with what the allegations were in terms of the death. So yeah, that would be a way the prosecution would likely undercut such a defense if it is raised.
And that's an interesting thing to try and get the evidence of that, of this being a pattern of behavior. We've learned that several of the family's devices have been examined. One phone handed over, identified coming from CK. Christopher Kempner is Anna's father's name, CK. We don't know if that's him, but that's if we can connect the dots, that might be him. If they're pulling data from the victim's father's phone, I'm assuming they're probably looking at other family members' devices as well. What does that tell you about what exactly they're looking for in this? Is it just to try and figure out what happened here, why they were in this room together at this time, or are they looking for the pattern on those devices of the parents of the father having knowledge of some issues here with the boy, or what might they be looking for in dad's phone?
Tony, all of the above, and look, I mean, families often discuss family issues, and you can do it privately. And with cell phones, it's not uncommon to discuss even sensitive matters. You know, I text my mom about private stuff that happens within families. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they're probably looking, hey, is there a message from the victim to dad from 2 months before this saying, hey, stepbro did that thing again. We got to talk about this. This thing keeps happening. Is there a documentation of this pattern that exists? Because the evidence of any alleged prior misdeeds can't come from the scene. She's gone. She can't testify about it. So they've got to reconstruct that through this digital footprint if it exists.
And once again, we're having the question of parental culpability come into the case again. I mean, every single case we're seeing with someone under the age of 20 or even in their mid-20s seems to keep coming back to the same thing.
It kind of reminds me a bit of the Crumbleys. It reminds me a bit of, I forget the other families that with like the school shooting type stuff where they're being held accountable. But, and I guess the question is, again, this is just theoretical. I'm not saying it's on dad's phone, but let's say they find a pattern of pleas from Anna to dad or just information to dad from Anna about inappropriate behavior from the stepbrother. And let's say it shows up that dad's not really doing anything about it. It's just like, well, who knows? I mean, whatever it may be. Let's just say there's no action that is taken. Can charges be brought against the dad for something like that, for ignoring a child coming to you repeatedly? I guess it probably depends on the severity of what the complaints are. And should they be, I guess would be the question. I mean, that would be an interesting kind of new precedent to set too. But hey, if we're going to go after bad behavior here, I think let's go after everybody in this crew that's failing each other.
And if I could add one thing on that, Tony, too, for Eric, and that is, in those messages, how explicit would they have to be in order for, you know, like, can it be insinuation? Can you read into it, or to have to be really, really specific?
You know, I think most of us believe that the parents perhaps have a moral duty when they receive such information to intervene, to protect their children. That's their primary role. And they should do that, but that's not the same as a legal duty. And as a general rule, having knowledge of some horrible stuff in and of itself is not criminal. Now, knowledge plus a direct threat plus inaction, could that lead to criminal charges? I think we're getting closer there. We're talking about, you know, if there was a direct threat saying, hey, you know, stepbro said he's going to SA me again tomorrow. Please help me, dad. And believe me, I'm not saying that this text exists. I'm just talking about hypothetical. And the dad looked at that and did nothing. Is that inaction? Could that be seen as having a causal relationship to what happened? You know, I think some prosecutors might get creative under such circumstances and say, hey, we're going to try this. And so, you know, you think about charges like criminally negligent homicide, where if a person is complicit, well, it wouldn't be complicity. But if a person had the knowledge that something horrible was going to happen, like a physical assault, and took no action whatsoever. Is there a causal relationship between the ultimate event and their inaction? It's a tough call.
Isn't the connection here the fact? I mean, I know she's 18 when she's dead, but if these things happened prior to her turning 18, again, pure speculation here, wouldn't the connection be the fact that she's under 18, that she can't leave, she's a minor, and it's mom and dad that are ruling the house, and. Yeah, I mean, wouldn't that, like, you're basically a prisoner to a certain extent when you're a child. You can't leave by law. I mean, it wouldn't that be in itself of you're harboring this environment where someone is coming to you and saying, this person has essayed me or is threatening to, or I feel like he might or whatever. I mean, again, there's so many pieces of conjecture here. But just that in itself, if she's 20 some and he's an adult and they say it to dad and everybody's living at different places. I think slightly a bit different situation, but the fact that they're all under the same roof, they're all minors at the time. Again, if this were to all come out, wouldn't that definitely be the responsibility of the parents to take some sort of action there and not just brush it off?
Very possibly. And I think less so under like an involuntary or criminal negligent homicide theory, and more so under a child abuse theory.
Yeah.
Tony, if they are grossly negligent in terms of how they are parenting their kid, and they are knowingly perpetuating an environment that causes a substantial risk to the life or health of the child, that could qualify as child abuse. And there are charges for child abuse resulting in death. Now, there are causation issues that could come up about that, but child abuse resulting in death under such circumstances would not be beyond the pale.
And I feel like we're really flexing your legal brain today, Eric, because here's another angle I'm curious about on the culpability angle. And I want to, for everyone actually tuning in and watching, this is not taken away from the choice these individuals made and how responsible they are for it. No. I'm just curious how about this circle of culpability goes out. So on your conjecture hat, if they are going to use a defense for the son that he was mentally incapacitated or he's on drugs, wasn't getting his right drugs or whatever it is, do the parents then have more of an obligation because he's incapacitated? In other words, are they more culpable because they knew of his behavior and what he's on medication for than if he wasn't?
I think that there is some modicum of legal responsibility for a parent to ensure that a child whom they know is on a meds regimen to make sure that nothing completely out of whack happens. Now, they can't always control that. You know, it's up to the child ultimately whether that child ingests right. medication or not. But I think the parents need to have a familiarity and a knowledge and an awareness of the pharmacological situation with their child. And if something goes horribly wrong due in part to the parent's negligence with respect to that pharmacological status of the child, there are some arguments more so on the civil side that the parents might bear some responsibility.
So many issues we have in our society and world are systemic down to parenting, to bad parenting, to ignorant parenting. And I hope to God, if there is something here in this case that shows this, that shows some sort of pattern of ignorance, of ignoring threats, of ignoring it, that it does get prosecuted. Because this shit just, if we can get to the actual root and then actually start punishing those sort of things before they get somewhere else and parents are on realizing that they are on notice going forward for this, like we're seeing with the school shooting stuff, maybe some of this stuff can be prevented and it can't just be brushed away. I saw somebody made a comment. So many parents are very ignorant to when blending families because you're hell bent sometimes. Like, we want to make this work. It's all going to be good. And they get to the joking. It's everything's great. But then sometimes you ignore those dynamics and that it's never going to be perfect. But there is sometimes friction, but then there's threatening behavior too. And I feel like so many parents just, you know, put up the blinders to the threatening, and it's just, oh, it's just uncomfortable. Yeah. It can be far, far worse than that.
This is so much tragically heartbreaking, because in so many of these cases we're covering, these cases, the school shooting cases, so many times, I'd say, I didn't look at the stats as I normally do, but so many times someone, one of the children, whether the victim or even the perpetrators themselves, has reached out for help from parents and gotten nothing.
Gun.
Exactly. Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Like in the Crumbly case, you know, it's like, at what point is someone going to do something to start mitigating horrendous parents? Because kids know they need help. A lot of kids know they need help. I mean, even the horrendous Koberger knew he was a problem child. And granted, I'm not disparaging shame on the parents, because I think they did a lot with what they had. Could have done more. Obviously, anyone could in the hindsight. But again, he was aware that he had issues. All these people, so many of them know they have issues ahead of time, and yet something fails them, and they make some horrendous choices, and society's left paying the consequences.
So many times. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love to hear from you. Go ahead and drop them there. Robin's new book, go check it out wherever you get books. It's Not All About Me, also available on audiobook if you'd like to listen to it. That's how I like to consume my books. So go and check that out. Eric Faddis, as always, thank you so much for joining us and giving us all of your insights today. Until next time, for all of us, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.